Jack Layton is the leader of the New Democratic Party of Canada and is the Member of Parliament for the riding of Toronto-Danforth. On the line with me this morning, welcome to the commentary.ca, Jack Layton. Good morning, Mr. Layton.
Oh, very good to be on the line with you. Pardon my voice, got a bit of a cold.
Oh, really? Are you in Ottawa this morning? Or?
No, it's a constituency week, so we're back in our ridings, in fact, so I'm in Toronto today.
I'm interested to know, Jack, just how you came to your political thinking. I was reading your bio and preparing for this, and your grandfather was a minister in the Duplessis government in Quebec. Your father was a conservative MP and a cabinet minister with Brian Mulroney. Did that have in any way an influence into your own political thinking?
It's a bit of a puzzling political history for someone who's ended up as the leader of the NDP, that's for sure.
Right.
There's no question that there was lots of discussion in our family and belief that you could work towards change. We ended up with different changes that we wanted to support going back through the family's generations. But I think right now there is a spirit of a need for change, a change in direction for the country. And our political party, the NDP, has always advocated a change in the direction of greater equality, of more advanced environmental policies, of an independent policy for Canada on the world stage, the most recent example being the decision not to participate in the war in Iraq, which Canadians, I think, are feeling rightly very good about. And that's the kind of change that drew me to the NDP years ago. Was listening to Tommy Douglas when I was a student at McGill and hearing him speak out for human rights and for the sort of positive change we wanted to see. And of course, he was able to say, and look what we've done in Saskatchewan. We've built Medicare. We've built a cooperative economy there that's really working very well for people. So that was what was inspiring me at the time.
So there was never thought of you joining the Conservatives or anything like that, or was there? Or?
No, not at all.
Okay. I'm interested to know about being a new MP. You're part of this new class of MPs that have just come in after this last election. Is there a steep learning curve to when you get on the job for the first time?
Well, I guess I have perhaps a little bit of an edge, having been on a large city council for 20 years in Toronto. So I'd had some experience with how legislative bodies work. But there's no question that big House of Commons, there's 308 MPs there, and there's an enormous amount of shouting out and interruption and heckling, frankly, which I find pretty distasteful. You wouldn't want any class of students to behave that way, but yet that's what our House of Commons is doing. I think it's unfortunate. But on the other hand, there is some very good work being done behind the scenes, a little bit, to some degree behind the scenes, in the committees where our party, even though we have only 19 members, we're able to have quite a bit of impact. We've already seen the establishment of a standing committee on the status of women to look into a whole series of issues affecting women's equality. That didn't exist before we proposed it, and because it's a minority parliament, it was accepted. We also were able to convince, at least we thought we were able to convince the government to have a vote on George Bush's Star Wars missile defense prior to making a final decision. But late last week, we heard that the Minister of Defense is suggesting that perhaps that the cabinet would sign on before the House of Commons has a vote. That's pretty distressing, because if you want to deal with the democratic deficit, you certainly can't have that kind of arrogant decision making. You've got to allow the House of Commons, that was elected by people right across the country, which did not elect a majority Liberal government. You've got to allow them to decide on these issues so that the cabinet can be informed by the opinion, at least indirectly, of the people. But the other thing about the House of Commons is there's an enormous presence of lobbyists and spin doctors. You really don't see very many, if I can call them, as Ed Broadbent used to call people, the ordinary Canadians, the working families and so on, except as tourists going through behind the felt red rope, looking at the pictures. And that's very different from the grassroots sort of politics that I was used to in a city hall, and you can see it in city halls all across the country, where people come up directly, almost virtually directly, in contact with their politicians.
I'll talk about the missile shield in just a second. I've got a couple of other questions. You have the reputation of being media savvy, and accustomed to, and we see you on the stump or giving speeches or at a press conference or a scrum. But when I tuned into CPAC and I saw you give your speech in response to the throne speech, and there was a certain there was a different style, so to speak, with your speaking style then. It must be a thrill to speak in a chamber that has seen other speakers, and you cited them in your talk, Trudeau, Pearson, T.C. Douglas, and J.S. Woodsworth, is there not?
Oh, it certainly was a thrill. There's no question about that. I've been interested in politics since I was a young person. Got involved in youth parliaments and that sort of thing, and the idea of actually being in the House of Commons, having been chosen by the residents in your community to play that role, it was a complete and utter thrill, and it is every day that I'm there. And I've talked a lot to Ed Broadbent about this, who was our leader in the 70s and 80s and very, very popular, and he's now come back, and I'm so glad he's there because he's got wise experience, and he's working very hard for us to try and reform the electoral system. He's the taking the lead on bringing proportional representation to Canada, and that way people's votes really would matter in proportion to the number of votes cast. And listening to him and talking with him, even after all his years in Parliament, he was first elected in 1968, he still finds it a real privilege and a thrill. But, you know, it's also a question of staying in touch with people in their daily lives and what they're facing. And a lot of people are saying, where can I find affordable housing for my family? How can I send my young teenager on to university after education when tuition is so high? And yet we see these huge surpluses building up in Ottawa. Why isn't Canada a leader in environmental policy? Why are we behind George Bush's America on greenhouse gas emissions and pollution? People are asking a lot of questions when you get out of that House of Commons and into the communities. And I think one role that we can play as New Democrats is to try to bring that sense of change, bring people's voices into that House of Commons. And that's really the responsibility that I think we feel.
Sometimes in our history, minority governments have fallen because of the opposition voting against them. I've been talking to a couple of people, and they think that this government in particular will fall at the government's behest rather than the opposition's. What's the NDP's role in this minority government and advocating that change that you're talking about? And is that the central role that you were campaigning on, that you were asking Canadians for in the election last spring?
Yes, I think we've ended up with a central role in the Parliament. Would we have liked more seats? Sure. But with our 19 members in a minority Parliament, we have the chance to bring ideas forward, and to the government, the Liberals, require our support in order to stay in power. And, for example, on the speech from the throne that was debated a couple of weeks back, there was the suggestion by Mr. Harper that we should vote against the speech from the throne and bring the government down. This would have resulted in the Governor General turning to Stephen Harper to become the Prime Minister. Well, that wasn't something that we felt the Canadian people had voted to have happen, and so we carried on and supported the Liberals, subject to, in the end, there were some good amendments that were made to the speech from the throne that brought some issues like proportional representation and missile defense and pension reform, EI reform, these issues to the forefront. And that was an example of this new minority parliament working, where the Liberals were going to charge off in their usual somewhat arrogant way forward, and we were able to rein them in a little bit and say, wait a minute, you know, not everybody supported you this time around. You've got to listen to the people.
What's the direction of the NDP? And a lot of people talked about that when you were running for the leadership. Which way would the NDP go? Would they go the way that Blair took the Labour Party into New Labour, or would it still remain the big union, big Labour Party of the 70s and 80s? Gregor Robertson, as you know, the businessman who's won the NDP nomination provincially in the riding next door to mine here in Vancouver Fairview, does that winning the nomination there, does that signal a direction that the NDP is going into in this century, either provincially or federally?
Well, I think the NDP is actually, it is going through some changes. There's no question. There's legislation that has been adopted federally that says that corporations can't give to political parties anymore. We think that's terrific. Same with unions. Unions can't give money to political parties anymore. So now the membership and involvement in the New Democratic Party is much more grassroots-based. That's where the support comes from. That's where the membership comes from. That's where the decision-making comes from. There's no more large checks being written. Not that we ever had huge checks like the Liberals and Conservatives received from the corporate sector, but nonetheless, the playing field has been to some degree leveled, and we think that that's very positive. As far, though, as our ideas, I would say the main new focus or real emphasis is on how we can sort out and address the environmental issues that are facing Canada, but in a very proactive way. In other words, using creating jobs at the same time as reducing energy use by retrofitting buildings, creating jobs through manufacturing wind turbines instead of continuing to rely on fossil fuels, having a transition of our economy to the economy of the 21st century, and we're trying to bring people together who can imagine what that 21st century economy would look like, how it can be sustainable, as David Suzuki puts it, for a generation, or sustainability in a generation, I guess is his phrase, and to see if we can't propel government down that much more positive path. We're very worried by the commentary of Stéphane Dion, the new Minister of Environment, who says, you know, we shouldn't be so concerned about targets on climate change. Well, Canada should be in the lead in achieving greenhouse gas reductions. We shouldn't be at the back of the pack, and absolutely we should have some targets so we can measure ourselves against the progress of other countries and against our own goals. We think there's a real slipping on our environmental agenda in Canada, and I would say that that's an emphasis that you find in the NDP now that might not have been as strong a few decades back.
When you talk about the environment, I think of someone like Ralph Mayer, for example, who is known as a free enterpriser, and he's a former so-called cabinet minister, yet he believes that the environment is paramount. How do you get people like him, who are not necessarily left-wing, but who do find it important that the environment is at the top of our agenda?
And well, I've talked to Rafe many times on his show, and for example, about fish farming and how the way in which fish farming is unfolding on both coasts is causing lots of negative environmental impact, and how it's just got to be tackled very, very aggressively. And so I think it's a question of talking about those issues, and then step by step people will make their assessment. One thing's for sure in our national politics, and that is we're now in a fourth Liberal government, four in a row. I can't imagine people really want to see five in a row. Government's just become out of touch and arrogant and sloppy, and I think they're going to be looking for a change next time around. Our job in this minority parliament is to try and make change happen on individual policies, and that's what we'll be doing issue by issue, and then the election will come along when it comes along, and we'll try to present the kind of vision and for change that can excite Canadians. Clearly people don't want to go in the direction of George Bush, the policies adopted by Mr. Harper, and even with missile defense, we see the Liberals and Paul Martin, in a sense, cozying up to George Bush and saying, as he has said, that we better look at this this missile defense system as a way of being part of continental the continental arms strategy. We think it's an arms buildup and are very strongly opposed to it.
But when you travel across the country, though, do you get the sense that people like Mr. Mayer are going to vote for you this time and next time around, rather than voting green as he did?
Well, who knows what Ralph Mayer will do? I don't want to predict that. But I was really happy that the Greenpeace and the Sierra Club rated the New Democratic Party program as the most advanced and positive from the standpoint of environment, ahead of the Greens. And I also think the other factor is that we have seats in Parliament, a significant number of seats, and some good, strong environmental representation. We have Nathan Cullen, our new member from Northwest BC, who's our environment critic and just doing a superb job.
Let's talk about the Missile Defense Shield. this was in the news after President Bush was reelected. You called the proposal the weaponization of space, and you were opposed to it, and I suspect Canadians are as well. 58% in a SES poll are opposed to it as well. Why are you opposed to it?
Well, there's a whole series of reasons, and I certainly would recommend any of your listeners to get a copy of Mel Hertig's new book about Star Wars missile defense. It's just devastating in laying out the arguments showing that this would, in a sense, in a fundamental sense, propel us into a new arms race and would cause other countries, China and Russia and others, to begin to expand their missile capacities, their capacities to deliver nuclear weapons. And in Canada, we've believed that after the arms buildup of the 50s and 60s and the Cold War, the concept of mutually assured destruction as a way of preventing global warfare, that what Canadians wanted to do was see a gradual step-by-step dismantling of those weapons. And indeed, there had been some progress in the 70s and in the 80s. And the problem now is that the ballistic missile treaty that was preventing the expansion of the weaponization of our world again, including weapons in space, that treaty was torn up by George Bush so that he could begin to build his missile defense shield for North America, a gigantic technological fence that hasn't been proven to work, that is unbelievably expensive, and that essentially tries to seal off North America from the rest of the world based on a concept of fear. And I understand that people are frightened, but the way in which to deal with this isn't by building higher and higher fences, because the technology is unfolding so fast. Even the Russian administration has already shown that they have a ballistic missile defense delivery system that can literally dodge the interceptors that would be sent up under the George Bush plan. So it's already out of date before it's commissioned. Do Canadians really want to go in this direction? I don't think so. And what we want to do is see the world's resources used to ensure that we have a planet that is sustainable to pass on to future generations, and to address the enormous inequalities and suffering we find around the world right now. They don't want to see our resources of the affluent countries focused on ever-increasing arms buildup.
Were you, like Carolyn Parrish, for example, dumbfounded by Bush's win last week?
Well, I'm not going to comment on Carolyn Parrish. I think that I don't understand why she ran for the Liberals if she feels the way she did. It's bizarre to me, because it was very clear that the Paul Martin was headed towards the missile defense program. He's intent on taking Canada into that George Bush initiative. And even though the Liberals advertised their they were different than the Tories on an issue like this, I'm not sure there really is a difference. I guess the American people will make and have made their democratic decision. I think what Canadians can reflect upon is that we're different. We have a unique culture here. We have values that cherish human rights, for example, a very different reaction to the whole concept of same-sex marriage in Canada than you see in the States, different reaction around marijuana and the criminalization of it, different reactions around how we organize our healthcare system, how we care for one another. We believe we should do it together through a public system. Never mind that Gordon Campbell's trying to take it apart, and I want to commend the public sector groups that are fighting so hard against the privatization of our medical system in BC, and Carol James and her team in the British Columbia context really doing a good job of highlighting those changes and how Gordon Campbell has gone far too far.
You mentioned that. I want to get back to something you just said about why Carolyn Parrish ran for the Liberals. Should she have run for the NDP then? Is that?
Oh, I don't know. She does tend to insult people, and I don't believe that's the way to make headway. I think you want to stick to the issues and I don't think we should be insulting the Americans. Are you kidding? They're our best friends. We have enormous contact with the citizens of the U.S. There's millions of them who think the way we do. We saw that in the election. It's true that those supporting George Bush's perspective did win in the end, but it was still reasonably close. And I think for us to call other people names, people from other states, is not a way to go.
Jack, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us, and I'm sure the audience that listens, that visits our site, will appreciate your thoughts. And again, I want to extend a standing invitation to you and your colleagues, and anytime you can, when it's convenient, to appear on this interview segment.
Well, very good, and thanks for the opportunity, and certainly invite your listeners to come to ndp.ca and sign up for our newsletter and stay in touch with us.
Jack Layton, thank you very much.
Bye now.
For the commentary, I'm Joseph Flanagan.